Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, a science-led biopharmaceutical company dedicated to elevating conversations about biomarker testing to improve outcomes for advanced cancer patients. Learn more at AstraZeneca-US.com. Welcome to Yale Cancer Answers with Drs. Howard Hochster, Anish Chagpar, and Stephen Gore. I'm Bruce Barber. Yale Cancer Answers is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care by welcoming oncologists and specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. This week, it's a conversation about alternative medicine versus conventional therapy with Drs. Skylar Johnson and James Yu. Dr. Johnson is a resident in therapeutic radiology, and Dr. Yu is an associate professor of therapeutic radiology at Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Gore is a professor of internal medicine and hematology and director of hematologic malignancies at Smilow Cancer Hospital.
So, Skylar, I understand you're training in therapeutic radiology.
Yes, that's correct. I've been in radiation oncology for 3 years and did an internship for 1 year, so I'm 4 years deep.
Got it. And James, you're an old hat or something, as we would say.
This is my 9th year on faculty, if you can believe it.
Well, I can believe it because I've only been here 4 years. So as far as I know, you've been here 20 years, but you look too young for that. So that's good. So, and just to start off, Skylar, I assume that you went into therapeutic radiology because you're interested in offering radiation treatments to patients, no?
That's a fair assessment. Actually, I have kind of a personal connection to cancer care. My wife was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was a second-year medical student.
Oh, wow.
And so throughout that process, I realized it was a great field to be in, an opportunity to make a big difference in the care of patients, and that's kind of what led me into radiation oncology.
Well, great, and certainly we love our radiation oncologists and value you all and refer patients to you, less so in my field than in which is leukemia, where we need you less, but sometimes we do, of course. So, Skylar, what got you interested in alternative therapies, which would seem to be like the anti-radiation?
Yeah, so I think it's something that we were seeing with increasing frequency in the clinic. We were seeing patients who were initially refusing their recommended cancer therapies. And then on the flip side, we were seeing them come in late with more advanced cancers that had spread to lymph nodes or distant sites just based on the fact that they wanted to upfront try something a little bit different or unproven. And this was concerning. We went to the literature and we said, how can we help these patients make an informed decision? And there was nothing out there. So we felt like it was an important question that needed to be studied further.
So tell me about the subject of your study and what questions you were asking and how you went about that. I mean, from my perspective as a cancer doctor, you know, patients bring in lots of lists of all sorts of supplements they take. Turmeric is a big one these days, and any number of other things. So what do you include in alternatives, and sort of what was your question? How'd you go about it?
Yeah, so basically I do a lot of cancer outcomes research in large databases, and found this particular code that I thought was very interesting, and it was basically patients who chose unproven medical therapies in lieu of conventional cancer therapies.
No, just a minute. I'm sure that our audience doesn't know what a code is or a big data set is, because I know that before my wife and I started collaborating, because she's an outcomes health economist, about 10 years ago, I didn't know what they were. So what's a big data set and what's a code?
So basically, there's information that's collected about cancer patients nationally within a large database. And every time a patient makes a decision or information about the patient is collected in this data set. And then we can look at this information to evaluate outcomes.
All the data is anonymous.
Yes.
I was going to say, is the NSA involved here?
No.
Citizen 4? Are we talking about I have to turn off my cell phone now?
I mean, these data sets were created to provide national information on, you know, how we're doing as a society in terms of curing folks.
And so they're not spying on Steve Gore to see what medications I'm taking and whether they should be reporting that to my employer.
It's actually illegal to try and figure out who Steve Gore is in the database.
I'm very relieved now.
Right.
Okay, so there are these organizations, and I guess some of them are like the National Institutes of Health and stuff that are agglomerating all this data, this stuff, I guess the Centers for Medicare and others?
It's a Commission on Cancer Accredited Centers. It's basically
for this particular database.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically a joint venture with, what is it?
It's the College of Surgeons.
The College of Surgeons. It's the Commission on Cancer Accredited
Centers. It's a database called the National Cancer
Database. So it's 1,500 basically cancer centers nationwide, academic and both community centers, and it captures 70% of cancer diagnoses annually.
So the patients get entered, the patients anonymously get entered into a database,
correct,
right? And what information gets collected about them?
So it's their age, their diagnosis, their stage, their education, their socioeconomic status, and then their survival, types of treatments that they received, so on and so forth.
Okay, and all of that's in some kind of a code? There's a code for different treatments or what?
Yes, uh-huh. Exactly right.
Okay, so you found this unusual code.
Yeah, so it was kind of unusually specific, and so when we look at the code, we saw that these patients were using unproven medical therapies for the treatment of their cancer and also refused surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy.
Does it show that they refused?
Yes.
Huh, okay. Because like when I have a patient on supplements, I don't like put in a code that says that. I wonder how that happens.
Right, so the registrars, right, the folks who are abstracting the data will read your note and say you get a patient, Mr. So-and-so refused therapy and in favor of, vitamins or in favor of baking soda.
So we know who you are, people. Okay, got it. But it's anonymous.
Yeah. Well, we don't know who you are.
We don't know who you are. Yeah, and we know what you're doing.
Right.
And it's an important distinction as well is if you're seeing a patient, you're likely offering them conventional cancer therapies, and they may be doing something on the side or in addition to what you're recommending. You may not think that that's of particular interest. You may not put it in your note for a registrar to abstract that data. But those patients who refuse those therapies,
right,
it's more... It stands out a little bit more, and it is something that a doctor would know.
And a doctor would want to note it because, if nothing else, from a medical legal standpoint, he or she wants to document that he offered or she offered an appropriate therapy and explained why it might be the usual recommendation or her recommendation and why the patient declined that. I mean, I think that's what most of us would want to do, if nothing else,
exactly,
to cover our own butts, right?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Right. Okay, so you found this code, and you went to James and said, James, I've got a code. How did that work out?
It was basically that. It was kind of a eureka. That's the word. Right. It was basically a eureka moment because I think that it's an important question. Like I said, we'd been seeing it in clinic, and it's an important question that there's really no literature out there to speak of. And basically, these are hard patients to follow because usually they say they're going to do this, and doctors, they talk to them, and they eventually leave and sometimes don't return, so we don't really know what happens to them.
And we were seeing it in the clinic, and we would see patients come in a more advanced stage of cancer than really they should have been in, and they would report they had tried something else before coming in, and we didn't know what the impact of that was, whether, maybe they're just as curable as folks who try standard therapy first because, of all the great things about modern medicine and trying to cure these folks. But to us, it seemed like those patients were doing worse because they were more advanced when they came in.
Yeah, but we know you conventional medicine people have this bias against alternative therapies, right? So you're looking... right? You're looking to feel that way, so, I would say.
So one of the
I know you, James.
One of the things about the looking at the data was that all of the biases seemed to favor alternative medicine patients. They
okay.
were younger.
Well, let's just wait a minute on that.
Okay.
Okay, so you've got the code. You shared it with James. And now what? I mean, I've got a pile of patients who have a code that they're using something else. I don't know what to do with that. I would have no idea what to do with that.
Well, we basically had two questions going into it. We wanted to know who's making this decision and what is the impact of that decision. And so we started by characterizing the patients who were choosing alternative medicines.
Just describing who they were.
Exactly.
Just describing
without their names.
Were.
Right.
Exactly. And then we compared their survival to patients who were using conventional cancer therapies.
Okay, so who is using alternative therapies? Who were these people or are these people? What kind of people
are
they?
It's a great question, and this is a really interesting finding that's kind of been passed over in the lay media quite a bit, is that patients who are making this decision are generally younger patients who have higher socioeconomic statuses. They're generally higher educated.
They're healthier. They have fewer comorbidities. They typically live in the Mountain West or the West. I mean, these are healthy folks going into it. So you would think that they would be the cohort that does better. All things equal.
You mean that do better medically?
Do better
because
medically.
Coming in as
exactly.
Better.
You're younger, you're healthier, you have fewer other problems. You should be doing better in terms of your cancer cure.
You know, it's kind of interesting, and maybe we can get into it into the second half, but I think about how this is also potentially the, you know, the information millennial generation, if you will, that has access to how to do research and that might be the least likely, but that's something we can talk about. Okay, so you described who they are. They're not, you know, people of a certain age like me, although I've got plenty of patients my age who are doing this too, okay? And then, I don't know, it doesn't seem to me like you can just compare them, like, you know, because maybe one of them has a little ditzel of a lung cancer and the patients getting chemo or radiation have big, big old lung cancers, right? Yeah. So that's not going to be apples and apples comparison. No, well, like, what did you do with that data?
So we actually did a matching comparison. Basically, we matched two patients who did conventional cancer therapies to one patient who chose alternative medicine therapies on specific characteristics that we thought would impact their survival. So we matched them on their cancer type, we matched them on their age, their stage of disease, we matched them on their insurance type, we matched them on their race, we matched them on the year that they were diagnosed. Basically everything that we thought was important in regards to their survival.
So basically you take patient A who's not getting who opt out of conventional therapy, and you look at the features of this patient, and then you find a patient in the same demographic treated around the same time for the same cancer in all the same features, or you find two of them. Is that in that
exactly
person?
Right.
Okay, gotcha. And did you do this across cancers, or did you limit yourself to certain cancers?
So we did it for the four most common cancers. So we looked at breast, prostate, lung, and colorectal cancer, and curable stages, one through three.
And both radiation and chemotherapy?
As well as surgery.
So some of these patients aren't even getting surgery.
Exactly. None of the patients in the alternative medicine group got surgery.
Really? Wow. How many patients then were in this database that you looked at? I mean, how many patients did you select?
So basically there was 280 patients who chose alternative medicines, and then we compared this to the two patients who got conventional cancer therapy, basically
about
over
600.
800 patients total.
Right.
Okay. I don't know what to guess the outcome was. I have no idea. I'm going to guess that maybe it turned out that it didn't matter, that it's for these healthy guys and women, they can, you know, do stuff and they're still healthy enough to get treated so that everything comes out okay.
Steve, you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong.
Unfortunately. And you know, it was a little sad when we saw the outcomes, and we can go into it more.
Well, give us a little hint before the
big picture. Yeah. So basically, patients who chose alternative medicines for the treatment of their curable cancer were at 2.5 times greater risk of death over the study period than patients who chose conventional cancer therapies.
Ouch. Well, that's a sobering thought. But right now, we're going to have to take a short break for a medical minute.
Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, working to pioneer targeted lung cancer treatments and advance knowledge of diagnostic testing. More information at AstraZeneca-US.com. It is estimated that over 200,000 men in the U.S. will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, with almost 3,000 new cases in Connecticut alone. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who will die from this disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using two simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. Clinical trials are currently underway to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Artemis machine is a new technology being used at Smilow Cancer Hospital that enables targeted biopsies to be performed as opposed to unnecessarily removing multiple cores from the prostate. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Answers. This is Dr. Stephen Gore. I'm joined tonight by my guests, Dr. Skylar Johnson and Dr. James Yu, to discuss patient choices for cancer treatment, in particular, what happens to patients who choose less conventional therapies as opposed to recommended more traditional medical therapies. So, Skylar, before the break, you kind of dropped this bombshell that in this big database you looked at, and you found 200, almost 300 patients who had opted not to get treated, including not getting surgery for their presumably potentially curative cancers, I suppose, and compared them to similar patients who went the usual route. And you said there was a 2.5 times likelihood, a 2.5 increased times risk, I know I'm not saying that in English, for the patients of death. So the patients who had alternative therapies had almost 3 times or 2.5 times the risk of dying during the study period. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. It was really sobering to see that number. And we look at these in different ways, and we have figures and kind of these graphs, and we saw, you know, these people who chose alternative medicines, and it was kind of sad to think, wow, these people could have been on this other portion of the graph. They could have been, they could be alive.
You know, just for our audience who may not know, the Journal of the National Cancer Institute is really one of the most prestigious medical journals in the United States. And so for them to pick up on this, it's not easy to get an article into there. So they must have really seen this as a really important finding. Was that true across the board for all the cancers, or was it more true for certain specific cancers?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So when we looked at this, we separated out the cancers because this was of interest. Yeah. And the interesting thing was that the finding was surprising in a couple of ways. I actually thought that people might have worse survival than the 2.5 times greater risk. And when we look at it, it's because the patients have prostate cancer and breast cancer made up the majority of the data set. And the majority of those patients had lower risks of disease, lower stages of disease. And sometimes it takes a lot of years for those patients to actually die. And our follow-up period in our study, the amount of time that we followed these patients, was only about 5.5 years. So it's relatively short. So when we looked at these by diseases, prostate cancer actually didn't make much of a difference, but it's like, because I said, it's only 5.5 years. Usually we don't see changes until 10, 15 years down the road. Mm-hmm. But for breast cancer, women were at, you know, 5 times greater risk. Colorectal cancer is about 4.5 times greater risk. And for lung cancer, it was 2 times greater risk of death.
And what percentage of these alternative patients, eventually got conventional treatments? Did they mostly move on to conventional treatments, or did most of them decline, or you don't know?
So we don't know that. I mean, this database captures initial therapy.
It's a snapshot.
It's a snapshot. So it's even more sobering then, because some of these folks who started out on alternative medicine then went on to get traditional therapy.
But you don't know that for sure.
We don't know that for sure, but some of them probably did, and it still impacted their survival.
And so you don't know either then, I suppose, like let's say somebody had an early stage breast cancer where a lumpectomy with or without radiation might have cured them. You don't know what percentage of them when they, as things went along, presented with a higher stage that might have been harder to cure. You can't tell that from your database, or can you? In other words, did they start off with an early stage disease and then present with metastatic disease that could have been prevented? Do you know?
No, we don't know that. And again, this is something that we mentioned in the discussion of the study, is that the number, the 2.5 times greater risk, is likely lower than we imagine for some of the reasons I've already stated, and because these patients likely got treated later on. But a number of the patients probably showed up after having tried alternative medicines and ended up in our conventional medicine group. So we don't know that for sure, but
It's
possible.
Right. So it's obviously not a perfect study, but it's. I think there is a huge signal that it's sending us that initial alternative therapy within the database is matched as well as we possibly could still gives you a greater risk of dying of your cancer.
So, I mean, what do we do with this information? I mean, it goes into a very prestigious journal. It's good for your CVs. It's important information. But obviously, you know, these people in Colorado or wherever it is aren't reading the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, right? So they're going out to websites, I imagine, that's telling them that, you know, that Loco Boco berries or whatever else, you know, is the way to go, or Kai berries, or there's Noni berries from the Polynesian Islands was a big deal for a while. How do we get that message across, or is the data secure enough, or do you have to study this? Do you have to do a randomized study of Noni berries versus radiation, or what do you think?
So Skylar's been doing a phenomenal job getting the message out, and we're trying to do that more and more.
I'm not Oprah. Let me just
no,
say that.
I know.
you're making not even Phil Donahue.
You're not going to make me cry here, Steve. But I think
everybody's leaving with a car.
Right, right. You got a car.
Door number three.
I think we have to get the message out as practitioners, through social media, through radio programs like this, that if you have a loved one who's considering non-traditional therapy for their cancer, please have them, you know, talk to a complementary, for example, program that can maybe integrate that alternative therapy with standard therapy, or talk to a traditional modern cancer doctor who can maybe, you know, allay their fears about the potential treatment. But please don't just do alternative therapy that you read about online or you heard from unscrupulous practitioners. It's not going to work.
So tell me about this complementary approach. How is that different from alternative or...
Yeah, so the complementary approach is done in conjunction with conventional cancer therapies. So it's something that's done with conventional cancer therapies, and it's something that we see quite a bit. It's something that needs to be done openly with your physician, because if you use the wrong complementary therapy, it can affect your conventional cancer therapies. So generally, it needs to be done under close supervision. And that's entirely different than patients who choose alternative medicines, which was the purpose of this study, which are those patients who choose to forego conventional cancer therapies in favor of some unproven medical therapy.
And not all complementary and integrative programs are the same. I mean, you really should go to one that's attached to a respected medical center. I think there's one here at Yale that will approach it from a scientific standpoint, and one that will consider that complementary therapy in its relationship to standard chemotherapies, radiation, surgery.
All right. I'd like to pick up on that in a minute. One question I have is whether there is a separate code in your database for complementary therapies. Can you look at that?
Yeah, so this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but this is something that we're currently looking at. So there's patients who chose unproven medical therapies and then also received conventional cancer therapies as well, which is basically just complementary.
And you're going to do a similar analysis then?
In process right now.
Oh, great. That's awesome. So back to James's comment about, well, you should do the complementary thing that's what do they call the regular medicine? Allo medicine or something? There's some
allopathic.
Is the allopathic is the conventional thing? Is that
homeo
versus allo?
I guess it's depends. They'll say it's Western medicine or traditional medicine or allopathic. Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever the term might be, you know, that we should patients should use the Yale version or the Columbia version of complementary medicine. Isn't that? I mean, don't you think that that's just going to push these people away who are already very skeptical? You guys are probably the wrong messengers. And they're, you know, this is going to be seen as co-opted complementary medicine. I'm just guessing, right? I mean, you know, why would any major medical center, offer that which is, you know, really internet vetted and different? I think it's a problem that you guys aren't in some ways the best messengers for this, right?
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and I don't know what the answer to that problem is, regard.
Hopefully we've given – I mean, you're right. We're not going to convince the skeptic, but hopefully the skeptic's sister can take our paper and show it to them, for example. And hopefully we've provided a little ammunition in that war of facts versus fake news. Ooh.
Well, we won't go there. I would have to say that my personal experience, and not only in cancer, but discussing, you know, with anti-vaccine, you mm-hmm. know, people. You know, it's I'm not necessarily the right person to be discussing right. this with them because I'm an allomedicine guy mm-hmm. or a Western medicine guy, and I, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it would be kind of interesting if you could find some spokespeople who are from that group who has realized that that wasn't necessarily the best decision for them.
Yeah,
to be spokespeople. I don't know.
It's really tough because even the patients that we do see who have come in with more advanced cancers who have tried alternative therapies, they refuse to ever blame the fact that they tried an alternative therapy on the progression of their disease. And so, I mean...
And you probably don't push that on them either.
No,
right?
Not at all.
That's not helpful.
No, right? Not at all. But it's a belief system, and it's a strong belief. And unfortunately, we know based on other kind of scientific areas and studies that facts and statistics don't necessarily change somebody's beliefs. But I think that there are reasonable individuals who are on the fence about doing this because they may have been misinformed online. And we can have really open and honest discussions with them and build strong relationships of trust. And I think that they can be swayed. I really do.
Mm-hmm. But that assumes they get to your office in the first place.
Exactly.
Right. So do you guys pair with any homeopaths or other, I don't know, Asian medicine people in the community? Have you considered some kind of community outreach about that?
We have clinical trials ongoing in our department looking into Chinese herbal medicines. I think Dr. Higgins has an open study.
Right.
So it's not like we're closed off to the idea that other cultures have something to contribute to medicine. It's just that it needs to be done in a way that generates knowledge and doesn't place the patients at risk for progression of their disease.
No, I'm thinking more in terms of partnering, in terms of getting these alternative practitioners on board to be approaching this more as a complementary thing. I mean, I think this could be a really interesting community model if you could successfully get them to opt in and decrease the number of patients who are putting themselves at risk. And I think
Skyler,
really
how's your interactions with alternative medicine folks online? Has it been?
Yeah, I mean,
are they looking to collaborate with you?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it's hard. It seems to be two schools of thought for complementary practitioners, and the schools of thought are generally that you shouldn't offer any alternative therapy. It should always be done in conjunction with conventional cancer therapies. And then there's providers who will treat people without conventional cancer therapies. And it's really these kind of two schools of thoughts that make it difficult for us. But there are those who there's a Society of Integrative Oncology that's been very supportive of the study and has mentioned it quite a bit on social media. But the other practitioners, it's hard to know how to reach them.
Yeah. It's interesting. I earlier in my career, I was studying a drug in leukemias called sodium phenylbutyrate that was actually being studied by the NCI because they had isolated it from something called antineoplastons that was an alternative therapy, but that people really believed in. And once I had the NCI-sponsored study, I heard from a lot of patients who wanted to get this stuff. Mm-hmm. I became very close to that community, interestingly. So I know that it's a challenge, and those people are out there and open the door and they come.
Yeah, well, there's still individuals who are offering anti-neoplastin therapies out there.
Dr. Skyler Johnson is a resident in therapeutic radiology, and Dr. James Yu is an associate professor of therapeutic radiology at Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions, the address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and past editions of the program are available in audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. I'm Bruce Barber, reminding you to tune in each week to learn more about the fight against cancer here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.